An 18-month international sting operation led to the arrest last week of Hamant Lakhani. According to the FBI, Lakhani arranged to sell the shoulder-fired missile to undercover agents who posed as buyers interested in shooting down a commercial jet. Officials concede, however, that Lakhani is not a well-known arms dealer. The episode casts a light on the shadowy world of international arms trafficking. In the Sunday New York Times Magazine, there's a profile of Victor Boot, a Russian alleged to be the leading figure in the international arms trade. Peter Landesman wrote the article. He joins us from member station KPCC in Pasadena, California. Peter, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Can you give us just a brief bio of Victor Boot? Who is he?
Well, it's actually a little difficult to know. What is known about Boot, he's 36. He's thought to be that if he had traded in legal commodities, he would be sort of a Warren Buffett. He's really brilliant about human nature, brilliant about human appetites, seems to understand what people need. He's well-educated. He speaks six or seven languages fluently. And after spending nearly a week with him in Moscow, I have to say he's one of the most compelling figures I've ever met as a journalist under any circumstances.
How does it work? I mean, if he's such a shadowy guy, how does one country or one person, you know, make the connection with him and then make the deal, and then how are the weapons moved?
The answer to that actually begins in 1991, late 80s, when the Soviet Union began to fall apart and finally did dissolve in 1991. The Soviet army, the arsenal, was enormous, the largest in the world, and was completely up for grabs. So here comes Victor Boot, merely an opportunist, exploiting what is a massive market for weaponry. Boot quickly assembled the largest air network in the world, about up to 60 planes in Africa and the Middle East. And he began to develop relationships with despots, with rebel leaders, with dictators. And I'd say by the mid-90s, everybody knew who to go to, the man who could probably get them anything they desired.
Are there not any laws, I mean, international, American, or otherwise, that are actually in existence to be able to stop this kind of thing?
This question gets at the heart of what arms trafficking is really all about. Arms trafficking laws have purposefully been left vague, with loopholes that you could drive tractor trailers through. And the reason why, two reasons why, the major nations involved, the United States, Britain, France, and Belgium in particular, make a lot of weapons legally. The other reason is political. That is, if our arms trafficking laws were ironclad, they would stop the men who actually ferry material to people we want to receive the materials. A lot of these wars, insurgencies, and rebel movements are being done with our either our acknowledgement or our active encouragement. If we cannot arm these men, they can't really do our bidding.
What about after September 11th? Haven't men like Boot become a priority for the Bush administration?
Actually, the answer is exactly the opposite. The Patriot Act leaves open the possibility of doing more black ops business with men we will never hear about. We're now in the business of tracking terrorists. We're now in the business of tracking people we haven't been able to find before. And in order to do that, we need to cultivate relationships and sources more in the world in which these men operate.
If Boot considers himself the fall guy, as you point out in your article, that he's basically connected to higher levels of power in global politics. He says he was protecting you by not telling you any more about that. Were you able to learn anything more about the international arms trade and the global politics that are holding it up?
Yes. Interesting, when I was in Moscow to visit with Boot, I made an independent meeting with two intelligence agents who work for the West. These two men independently made very clear to me that I was pushing up against a membrane of information beyond which was really a point of no return. That is, Victor Boot was as far as you go and being left alive to tell the story. As an explanation, one of them told me the following story. About 6 weeks before I had gotten to Moscow, Vladimir Putin had installed two very close high-end aides in charge of two segments of Russia's quasi-private arms manufacturing industry. The industry is massively corrupt, and Putin was trying to bring it to heel. 10 days before I got to Moscow, both men were gunned down in broad daylight within 1 hour of each other. In Russia, this was barely news. Putin didn't even mention it. Putin hasn't even complained. One of these intelligence agents looked at me across a table and said, "You tell me who's actually making the decisions in this country." It's very clear that the government, as we know it, actually is not in full control, if any control, when it comes to arms trafficking.
Peter Landesman's article, Arms and the Man, appears in the Sunday New York Times Magazine. He joined us from member station KPCC in Pasadena, California. Peter, thank you very much.
You're welcome.